Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Friday, March the 19th. In the Catholic tradition, we call this St. Joseph's Day. So if you have a Joseph in your family, this is his day, St. Joseph's Day. And I have a Joseph in my family, my late uncle who passed away in 2008, my father's brother. So wherever he is, I know he's up there watching and probably listening to the show tonight. We used to call him Tio Jose. So, Tio Jose, this is your day. Well, today we're going to talk about a very serious subject, and that is what's happening on the border. It just seems to get worse by the minute. We have joining us tonight two of our good friends, George Rodriguez, with whom we've had lots of conversations about the border. And joining us tonight is Bruce Woodall, who is an author and a great friend of our show. And we're just going to put a bunch of ideas on the table and try to do a little round table like they used to do on radio or sometimes, and just kick this around because this is truly a problem. We just had 3,000 young people brought to Dallas, and they're at the convention center. Who are these young people? Nobody knows. Have they been tested for COVID? Nobody knows. You know, it's just crazy what is happening in the country. So I'm going to begin by putting down three ideas that I would like to begin talking about, and then we'll just go from there and hear what our friends have to say. So let me say hello to my friend George Rodriguez in San Antonio. How are you, George?
Real good, buddy.
There
you
are. How you been? How you doing, George?
Doing good. Doing good.
Give me a weather report. I can't let you get away without a weather report, George.
It was cool by our standards, a little cool today. It only got into the low 60s. But it was sunshiny. It was really pretty. It's been a little breezy, but today it calmed down. All in all, it's great. It's nice.
All right. And Bruce, give me a weather report in New Mexico.
It's windy. Wind is the state bird and the state song in New Mexico, I think. But it's warm, and it's been pretty nice. We got probably about 100 acres of Mexican soil blown through our town the other day.
Well, Bruce, I think illegal immigration comes in different ways, doesn't it?
Well, I'll keep the soil. You know, they do pretty good down there with their agriculture.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. Well, guys, as I mentioned in the introduction, we've got a very serious problem on the border, and it's not going to get better anytime soon. It has been totally mishandled, and I guess this is what happens when you open the door and you have no idea of what comes next. So I kind of want to begin with three points and then just kick it around and you know, bring up whatever you want to bring up. I'm just going to start out with three ideas. The first one is, you know, who exactly came up with the idea of bringing people to the United States at a time like this when we are finishing a pandemic. Many of us are doing better than we were 6 months ago. The states are doing better. More vaccinations. I mean, we're in the right direction, most of us, most of the states in the pandemic. But what sense does it make to bring people in at a time like this, especially from Mexico and Central America and other countries where the pandemic is a bigger problem than we have? So that's number one. Number two, what happens now with Mexico after we cancel Remain in Mexico, which was a very successful policy for Mexico and the United States? And last but not least, the criminal elements who are obviously taking advantage of moving these people up to the border. So that's just three ideas. Feel free to put in your ideas as well. So, Bruce, your reaction. Just give me a reaction to what's going on and you know, how do you feel about all of this?
I like what Alejandro, what's his name, Mayorkas said.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's his name, yeah.
Homeland Security Secretary, he puts this squarely in Biden's lap. He blames the president for this. And
you mean
Trump's
lap? You meant Trump, right?
No, Biden's lap. I read
he
it
did?
An article came out yesterday in Fox News, and I printed it out. He says this is Biden's fault. This isn't Trump's fault. Okay.
Hmm.
Under the Trump administration, we had the border pretty much. We're in control of immigration. Let me put it that way. All right. The wall was being built. Now, the wall is not being built, and people are coming over in just. And what did they say? 103,000 since February.
Hmm.
Something like that. I don't know how they have the numbers, how precise these numbers are, but. I say this, and people get mad. Conservatives get mad at me when I say this. But the inhumanity ends at the border. These people coming up here, some of them have never seen a doctor, have never been to a dentist. A lot of the children coming up have
mm-hmm.
not. And who
right.
knows what horror those children endured, you know, on the trip up here. And then they pass out these T-shirts, you know, Biden, please let me in. You know, it's an orchestrated event, and it's this sick American political expediency at the expense of these people from Mexico, Central America. And there's, you know, I understand they've intercepted some Chinese and people from the Mideast as well. So,
yeah.
I agree with you.
But is that, because I had not heard that before, because he was blaming Trump the last time I checked. So you're saying that he's now, Alejandro, whatever his name is, the head of the DHS, that he's now saying that this is on Biden? That's really interesting. I was not familiar with that.
Yeah, Mayorkas. And, unless I read this thing wrong. But
I believe you. I just had not heard that. I mean, it's pretty incredible if he said that. I just had not heard it. George, you're very close to the situation. You know a lot of people in the Border Patrol. You just sent me an article about how crazy it is down there. What's your reaction tonight, George?
Well, things seem to be getting even worse, which is hard to believe because, I mean, things are bad as it is. It's hard to believe that it would get any worse than what it is. But it is. The number of people... seems to be multiplying by a factor of 10 almost. They'll stop a group of 80, and then later on they stop a group of 100, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. And again, the whole problem that we've got is that everything that's happening is a result of catch and release. They are, the folks are, the technical word is being apprehended. What really they're doing is literally introducing themselves to the Border Patrol. Then the Border Patrol, and when they do, they declare that they are seeking asylum. So under those terms now, since we cannot return them to a third country, what is happening is that they are being processed and then given the date and then released. And, there's where the problem begins, is that they are released, never to be seen again. Folks are being put on buses. Greyhound is very, very upset because they don't know how to, handle the situation, even though the government is now paying Greyhound to transport these people. A lot of these folks don't know where they're going. I had an interesting experience a couple of weeks ago in going down to the Greyhound station here in San Antonio and visiting with some of the Central Americans that were there waiting for a bus or seeking a bus. One young lady had had only a name and a street address, and it was in Chicago. And she had nothing else. She had the street name, but she did not have the address, a physical number for that house. So you know, she was very, very much trying to contact her sister, but she didn't know how she was going to do that. She could barely read Spanish, let alone English, and she was towing along two little kids. It's very, very bad. It's a very, very bad situation. We not only are going to fuel the poverty industry, I mean, people that are going to have to be taken care of now, but we're going to fuel the homeless problem that we've got, because a lot of these people don't know where they're going, and they're just ending up in the park here nearby, near the Greyhound station. It is a problem that is getting worse and worse on so many levels that it's, you know, you're right. I don't know how you're going to put the toothpaste back in. Back in the tube. I don't know what can be done with this situation to track down these people, to get them legalized. I'm not sure that we can do that. I mean, what do these people have to offer to the United States? It's a bad situation, and it's getting worse.
Yeah, but Bruce, I think the problem, you know, let me get your reaction. First of all, Bruce, do you want to add anything to what George just said, or comment on what George said before I ask your question?
Go ahead with your question, Sylvia.
Yeah, because I think, you know, for me, you know, I came to this country, as both of you know, as a political refugee with my parents. I was 12 when I came here. But it was an orderly entry. In other words, we went through a process. And that process eventually led to our entry to the United States. And so I can certainly understand that people in other countries have reasons to leave or want to come to the United States. But I think what bothers me most about what's happening in the border right now is that there is no process. It's simply people showing up. And if you don't take them, you're called a racist. You know, if you simply say, well, okay, we cannot take all of you right now, well, you're a racist for saying that. So now we have this crazy situation here in Dallas, and I guess I'm giving you a speech rather than a question, Bruce, but I'm just going to let you comment. But now we've got the situation here in Dallas and in other cities where the convention center is full of people, 3,000 people. Nobody can go in. We don't know if these people have been tested for COVID, so they could be not only an immigration problem, but they could be a public health problem. So it's just frustrating because we don't know anything. The administration is not saying anything. And if you ask any questions, you're immediately called a racist, Bruce. And that's very frustrating. How can you have a conversation if every time you ask a question, they call you a racist, Bruce? That's just crazy, Bruce.
The racists in this whole thing are the, and I'm going to say white politicians, the waddles, in Washington, D.C. and other places that have conceived this migration of these poor, uneducated people, most of probably, you know, Indians, mestizos, who were promised a better life when they got here. And those are the racists exploiting these people for political gain for the Democrat Party. That is where the racism lies.
Yes.
I'll say it. I've been saying it all along. Nobody else wants to say it because they're afraid of coming back, you know, comes back at them as a racist. I believe that the thought of this is that the Democrats eventually have a voting constituency from these people because they'll be so full of gratitude that they'll, you know, always remember what the Democrats have done. But my friends here that are from Mexico and here legally, you know, they say, well, the Mojavos don't vote. They never will vote because they'll probably never get legal citizenship. And so the mess becomes that we're just going to have more people, you know, that we're going to have to deal with on a different level. They're going to have exceptional treatment. Like the county I live in New Mexico, the Sheriff's Department and the State Patrol were not able to ask a person their citizenship. They couldn't do that, even though it seemed to be apparent. If nobody had documentation for a driver's license and didn't speak English, they're probably here illegally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all I have to say about that. The racism is in Washington, D.C., willing to bring these people, these brown people, across the border. And I don't see anybody advocating for them on the basis of just who they are culturally and racially. All they want are these numbers. And someone's going to have to put up. And now you say there's 3,000 juveniles in the convention center there in Dallas. You know, where do they go from there? I don't have an answer for that. And George was right about the buses. There was a thing on the news I saw. Maybe you saw it too, George. Two or three buses, they loaded up and they shipped them off to North Carolina.
Yeah.
And they weren't testing for COVID.
Nope, they're not. And that's why Greyhound is very, very upset because, while they are being paid for it, they are leaving the buses contaminated and smelly and heaven knows what else. You know, one of the things that is very, very interesting or that I observed at the bus station was the lack of hygiene. Mostly from the kids who are not used to using indoor plumbing. It is a mess, guys. It is a mess. And the only thing that's happening now, today, the Democrats in the House passed a DACA amnesty bill as well as one for agricultural workers. Well, you know, the only thing that they're doing in this is encouraging more illegal immigration because if you've passed a DACA once, you're going to have to pass a DACA again. Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally worked on the 1986 Immigration Reform Act under Reagan, and we were told that was going to be the last and only amnesty that there was ever going to be.
Right. Now, and I remember
Venezuelans,
that.
The Venezuelans just got temporary status. Temporary status to stay in the United States. This is passing. When does it stop?
Right. Well, in the case of the Venezuelans, I do see a difference, though, in the sense that Venezuelans, at least they have a political problem in their country. And many of these countries, like in Central America and in Mexico, what we have is really more of an economic problem, particularly in Central America. I mean, the Venezuelan refugees, most of them are actually very well educated. And they're people who, if they were to stay here permanently, could be very productive. But I understand your point about where does it stop. But, George, you were telling me something very interesting. And if you could relate it to us now, and then we'll take a break. You were saying something about that there were some women, some GOP women who were collecting.
Please
share that story with us.
And this is one of the things that really angers me, shocks me and angers me, is that the Border Patrol agents, and this is the second time that they have gone through this, the Border Patrol agents do not have gloves or hand sanitizer to process and to work. I mean, they've got to search, frisk the people coming across. They are obviously in close contact with them. They are in little offices, and some of them the size of a small warehouse, a small shed, and they don't have access to masks or gloves or hand sanitizer. And the Republican women here in South Texas who have become aware of it have started a very, very robust, raising awareness effort. And they are gathering up supplies to take them down to the border to the agents. But I find that just outrageous. that our government cannot take care of these
right.
agents.
No, I agree. I agree with you. I think that's an outrage. And when you send me that information, that's why I wanted you to repeat it on the air, because that's an outrage. I mean, these men and women who are working in Border Patrol, you would think that that they would be provided with those kinds of materials. They're coming into contact with people. They have no idea where these people are coming from. I know Mexico quite well, and I've spoken to many people in Mexico who've told me that their pandemic problem is very bad. And I assume it's not any better in Central America. So you're dealing with people who could be themselves positive to the pandemic or test positive if they were tested, or, you know, who could be spreading it to our border. That's just criminal that this is not being addressed. So, I mean, it's just somebody has dropped the ball, to say the least. Let's take a little break, guys, and when we come back, I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about where we go from here, you know, and maybe some ideas for you know, fixing this problem that is totally out of control right now. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting tonight with two of our good friends, George and Bruce. We've had them on the show before, but separately, not together. But tonight we are all together in this panel talking about the problem on the border. Well, I guess where do we go from here, guys? I mean, how do we begin to correct this? My impression is that the Biden administration doesn't have a clue, and that the states may very well have to start, you know, doing this on their own. That is literally,
you know,
yeah, go ahead, Bruce, go ahead.
George hit on it with the agricultural visas. I think this bill that they just passed is H.R. 1603 or something. In the past, nobody gave any, okay, in California, the agricultural visas were passed out like bus tokens. Okay, in Texas, they stuck to the program. Colorado stuck to the program, agricultural visa. And people that didn't have it or didn't comply were written a citation for agricultural trespass. Okay, that was in Colorado years ago. I had worked with a group of, in 79, of Kickapoo Indians who have unique status in Mexico, had come across the border to work in Colorado, and they had none of the paperwork, the protocol, you know, and that's where I learned about these agricultural visas. And Silvio just hit on it. It's going to be a state by state issue, and so we're going to have the state sovereign states deciding what to do in many instances in conflict with the Biden administration and these other Democrats that, you know, want to push this thing through. And they fully expect the states and the cities to absorb these people. But we're recovering from a pandemic. Many Americans are unemployed. And the jobs in the service sector, the motels and the restaurants, just aren't going to be there for these people. And the same can be said with construction. When I had my painting business, I ran into a lot of guys that would come up here and didn't have the proper paperwork. And I had a crew from El Paso that were from Mexico, but they all had citizenship, that green card or whatever it is allows them to work. So I didn't have that problem. But, I mean, you both just hit on it. You know, there are things in place to deal with this, but who's going to do this? It's going to be the states. And I think Texas will be one of the first ones to step out and say, this is what we're going to do. I'm seeing that already. The second thing we'll see is the Democrats are going to break with the Biden thing. That's why I say this Mayorkas article I printed out. He said that this falls squarely in Biden's lap.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, about the Democrats breaking, there is a Democrat representative in South Texas, George. He's probably not that far from you, Henry Cuellar, who's been very critical of the Biden administration. And, in fact, I have a post coming out tomorrow where I have a quote from Henry Cuellar where he's criticizing the Biden administration, saying what the Biden administration should do is to tell these people not to come here illegally. That's pretty amazing for a Democrat to say that, George.
Yep. And he has support also from a neighboring Democrat from Vicente Gonzalez, who is the congressman right next door to him. Henry covers Laredo and parts of the border south of there too. Close to McAllen, and then Vicente Gonzalez has Harlingen and Brownsville and the rest of the Rio Grande Valley. Between the both of them, they are extremely worried. They have voiced a lot of concern over the immigration surge. They've expressed a lot of concern over the kids. But all of that is politics. All of that is politics. Both of them had counties in their area, in their districts, that went for Trump, heavily for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they have some very, very good Republicans running against them. In fact, I met a young lady who is running against Vicente Gonzalez, who's already announced, and she's already gathering steam, gathering money. Looks very, very – I mean, I think she can beat him. I think she lost – to Gonzalez by something like 3%, which is absolutely outstanding in South Texas. I think this time around she'll beat him. And Henry Cuellar sees the writing on the wall as well. The other thing that we need to understand also is that because of all of the bad news that's coming out, the Biden administration and Mayorkas have put a ban on the Border Patrol sending out any notes or issuing any comments or taking any pictures. Mm-hmm. They have also clamped down on anybody trying to get any tours of certain areas. They're shutting down the areas themselves. So I mean, they have to be sensing some kind of desperation because they have opened an absolute Pandora's box.
They really have, and they've done it at the worst possible time, which is what I said at the beginning of the program. If you're going to bring people in the United States, okay, don't bring them as we're coming out of a pandemic, and like Bruce was saying, unemployment is high in many of these cities. Historically, Central Americans end up in L.A. That's kind of where they like to go. And there's lots and lots of Central Americans in L.A. But if you know anything about Los Angeles right now, the city is very much closed. And they're slowly starting to reopen, but that's going to take some time. So what are these people going to do? Assuming they get in, where are they going to live? Where are they going to go? Where are they going to work? We don't have the economy right now to absorb those people, Bruce. I mean, you know, it's just crazy, the timing of this. It's also crazy, Bruce.
New Mexico doesn't have the facilities to house or care for these people. New Mexico is a poor state. I live here because I like the topography, the culture, love Mexican food. I choose New Mexico. But as far as these travelers coming through, they won't stop in New Mexico. They'll go to Denver or where was that city? I was in Boston a few years ago. Remember I told you? And I met a bunch of young men from Mexico that were working on a drywall crew. They were working at night in the Holiday Inn I was staying at, and they all knew where I lived, the town I live in. Mm-hmm. And we had a nice visit, and then nice kids, good kids, hardworking kids, you know. And I didn't ask them about their citizenship, but that's where they go. That was 2019, I was in Boston. And a friend of mine, the guy was in the Army with, he lives in Racine, but he said that Minneapolis gets a lot of these these guys too. But they're also in competition with the Somalis. There's a large Somali population there, and they don't want the Mexicans and Central Americans there. And there is that conflict.
Yes. Well, there's, you know, and the problem with the economy is a huge problem, George, because normally what has always been, you know, the way illegal immigration has always been defended by people is, well, Americans won't do those jobs. Well, the problem right now is that a lot of Americans are not working. So not like, you know, this is not 2018 or 2019, right before the pandemic. I mean, in 2019, I mean, this, I can just tell you, Dallas was booming. I mean, everywhere you went, you saw construction, new restaurants. I mean, in Dallas, if you showed up at 9 o'clock in the morning, you had a job by 10 o'clock that morning. That's how good the economy was. Well, that's not the case anymore, George, and I would assume not the case in New Mexico, Bruce, or George, and even in South Texas. I bet there's not a lot of work down there, George.
Definitely not. And gasoline has started creeping up, which has a lot of these counties that had suddenly found new wealth with fracking. They're losing their gas revenues, and so they're panicking over that as well. And I mean, this is such a bad situation. It's very interesting, though, how the liberal media sometimes tries to cover for Biden, even though they won't admit it, but they certainly are. The Associated Press ran an article yesterday saying that only 6% of the illegals that had been checked tested positive for COVID. So, you know... which is very, very interesting because, you know, again, of the number that were checked, so how many were not checked, you know, what's the number on that? As well as if that number is, does that mean that 6% is okay for the rest of us then to go back to opening our economy and opening our jobs, going back to our jobs and whatnot? It's very, very interesting how the spin was on that story.
Yeah, well, that's right, and the problem, and maybe you guys know this better than I do, but from what I understand, Bruce, is that lots of people get in that we don't catch, so we don't know, you know, for sure. I mean, if it's 6% of the ones that we've caught, if it's the same percentage, let's assume it's the same percentage for the ones who get away, that just means that hundreds of people are walking into Texas or New Mexico or whatever who are COVID positive and who could create a problem for the people they run into, Bruce.
If we can trust that number, I don't know where a media outlet would get that number. Let me put it this way. I don't trust them to give us the accurate information. Mm-hmm. As far as New Mexico, for them to make it from El Paso through New Mexico, they'd have to go through Fort Bliss, the McGregor Range, and this is where they train tankers and armored vehicles and stuff. A massive range goes from Texas into New Mexico. Holloman Air Force Base, the Escoro bombing range. I mean, not the best place for people on foot to try and, you know, walk through because they can't drive through. You can't drive up 54. Because of the checkpoints, the Border Patrol checkpoints, everybody goes through them. And so where do they go? I mean, I guess they solved that problem for us by putting them on buses. And if Greyhound doesn't want to transport these people, the federal government owns a lot of those Bluebird buses that they could be donating to this cause, you know, spend them somewhere else. You know, but it is a humanitarian crisis. And humanity ends at the border, but then it's going to become worse when they leave the protection and facilities of the federal government at the border and they're out there on their own, like in a park in Chicago or North Carolina or, you know, I mean, Denver. You know, Denver is bad for that. I have three kids that live in Denver. and it was in Colorado where I dealt with the Kickapoos in 1979. I was working for a Native American organization, and that's how we got involved with them.
Yeah. Well, like George was saying, though, there was a young lady there at the station who was going to Chicago, but really didn't know the address of her family in Chicago. So what is this young lady going to do when she gets to Chicago? I mean, I assume there will be some charities there that could help her. But,
yeah.
George,
so maybe that'll work. That's still very...
Well, she had nothing. She had the address, and that's it. She had a new little card that told her when she was supposed to... gave her a date when she was supposed to appear before an immigration judge to have her asylum case reviewed. You know that's not going to happen. I mean, you know, she didn't even know what asylum was. I mean, it was very, very interesting with that. You know, another aspect of it, though, guys, is in talking to the Border Patrol, it's not just COVID that they're coming across with. Border Patrol sector chiefs, was telling me that some of his men have been infected with lice from working with the kids, as well as one of them came down with mumps. It's not just COVID that we're looking
right,
at.
Right. No, I can assure you. And, you know, something that Bruce said, which I agree with when he says the inhumanity stops at the border. And I know what you mean, Bruce, because when these people get to the border, it could be the first time they've ever seen a doctor or perhaps even a toilet, okay, as simple as that sounds. It could be the first time they've actually had a shower or a toilet, given where they come from, particularly in places like Honduras and so on. So I agree with you, the inhumanity ends at the border in the sense they're finally going to be treated respectfully, because our Border Patrol people will treat them respectfully. But the problem is when they go into the country, you know, what kind of situation are they going to go in? I do want to ask another point here, and that is, it seems to me that if you're going to bring people into a community or into a district or whatever, shouldn't you ask permission of the people who live there, who are paying the taxes for the social services or the schools that are now going to have to, you know, attend to these people? I mean, I would say yes, George. What do you say?
Of course. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is not, you know, that we are being inhumane or racist or anything of the nature. We understand. I mean, if I was in their shoes, I would hear about the best country in the world opening their doors and us having an opportunity to come in. I would do it. The problem is that there's got to be an orderly manner to this. Mm-hmm. I am a citizen of the United States. I want my border respected. I want my country respected. I am a taxpayer. I do not want to pay to encourage people to break the law. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
No. I know exactly what you're saying, George. Bruce, what about the idea of letting people know that, you know, a busload of people is coming in that they're going to have to pay for it, Bruce?
I imagine there would be a roadblock and vigilantes or something. I don't know. An example occurred in Colorado in the 80s, and I got to say maybe sometime in the 80s, one of the school districts there would not allow the children of immigrants or field workers to be in the same classes with the citizens' children, because the citizens' children were coming home with body lice and things like that. And so they told these kids that they could no longer come to school, okay? Now, if that isn't inhumanity, I don't know what is. Maybe they could have directed their energies into cleaning these people up, but they just banned them from society. Where they went from there, I don't know. Was it last time I spoke to you, Sylvia, that I told you about the line of I was in line to catch a flight at El Paso Airport?
Yes, yes, and you told me about the kids who were coming through, yeah.
It was 5
o'clock
in the morning.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that story.
Yeah, and they were all clean. They had new clothes. There were still tags on some of the ball caps, and they had new shoes, and they had plastic bags and shopping bags. And there was a woman with them who spoke Spanish and English, and she had the paperwork for all of them. And the United agent put them in front of us so they could catch their plane for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I was
yeah.
catching a plane for probably New Jersey, because that's where I, you know, where I spent a lot of time. And they were cared for. They were clean, but you could tell that they were scared. They were uneasy going from wherever they came from to this big airport, and they're going to get on this plane. But this woman that was in charge of them, their escort, handled it very well.
Yeah.
And
look, I can tell you, having gone through this experience myself when I was 12, coming into the United States, now I had the wonderful protection of my mom and dad, who basically, you know, as they say, they were the front. You know, the three of us were behind them. So I was scared, but I knew that my mom and dad were there to protect us. But, I can sympathize how scared some of these kids can be, like George was saying, that young girl at the bus station. But let me close with one question, and that is, where do we go from here? And just like if you had an idea to at least stop the problem, stop the bleeding, what would you do? Let's say, George, what would you do to stop this?
Well, first of all, we've got to stop encouraging the immigration. We've got to shut it down and just say, okay, we're going to start deporting people. Once you start deporting people of all ages, including the kids, then you will see you will see an immediate reaction, of course, of people recognizing that they just can't cross anymore. The second thing is then you also have to crack down on the security of the border with more Border Patrol agents, maybe the military, finish the doggone wall. And anyone that has entered over the last, year illegally should not be receiving any kind of assistance. That will just cut off the, in my opinion, that would just cut off the reward aspects of it, the sense of entitlement, the sense that you can get here, and once you're here, you're okay. We need to get tough. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, we have just excused it, felt sorry. We have wanted to be very, very Christian in our approach. And my friends, all it's done, it's made things worse. So, in my opinion, it's time for us to just get tough and just enforce the law. You enter illegally, you are deported. Bottom line.
That's right. No, I think you're right about that, Bruce. How would you fix it? Did I lose Bruce?
I'm sorry. I had to get up and let the doggy out.
No, that's all right.
No problem. I live alone, so the cat
no
and
problem.
Dog,
no problem.
Whenever you call, they're right here.
Okay. No, but I was just going to say that that's right. I was just going to ask you, how would you, I know it's you cannot fix it right away, I know, but what would you do to start at least stopping the bleeding, Bruce?
I would close the border.
Yeah.
Continue with the wall, enforce the border, and then I would start deporting people, send them back home.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be what they want, but the criminal element in the United States will exploit these people, which we know about, and then it's going to be worse in these neighborhoods that they go to with these stimulus checks hitting the streets, because that just fuels the criminality There's people there, just animals, just waiting for these checks to hit the street. And then if they see these other people coming that have no protection, if they get a job, they're going to be paying protection to the criminal element in the United States. That's one of the things I write on is organized crime. And it's there. It's waiting for them. And as well as the cartels moving a lot of product across the border, because the Border Patrol has consumed people coming across. Right. So the diversion is there. So,
that's,
you know,
exactly what Senator Cornyn, by the way, was saying today, that the Border Patrol is basically babysitting people and changing diapers.
Exactly.
And,
that's exactly right.
They're, you know, the border is wide open for criminal elements to come in. Well, I tell you, it's a very bad situation. I don't know how it's going to get any better, but I do agree with both of you that you have to enforce the law, and you have to say this is the border, and if you want to come in, there's a legal way to come in, and if you do it any other way, you're going to be deported, because unless you bring some, you know, normality back to the border, I don't know how. I mean, how in the world do you deal with all these people coming over? I mean, the convention center, 3,000 people here. I wonder what other convention center in Texas has 3,000 people. I mean, I assume in San Antonio and Houston, George.
Yeah, you know, we're going to find out. I guarantee we're going to find out before long, because there will be, I guarantee that there are going to be reactions from some local leaders who will say, no, not here, not in my backyard.
Right.
It's going to happen.
Well, I think the spotlight is on Governor Abbott, and, you know, we'll see what he does. But my sense is that he's limited in terms of using the National Guard, because the federal government will step in and federalize the National Guard, and that will take away that option. So I don't know. I don't know if the governor can do more than just raise the topic. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me tonight. It's been a lot of fun talking about something very complicated, but I'm going to ask each one of you to give us a little update on what you're doing. Bruce, what's your latest book? What are you working on?
Well, I'm not working on a book. I'm working on a screenplay for someone else's book.
Good.
Okay. And so today I didn't work on that. I got some pictures from my daughter, and my 3.5-year-old granddaughter was at an exhibit of dinosaurs.
Hmm.
And my granddaughter just loved the Tyrannosaurus Rex with the menacing teeth and stuff. And so she's not listening to this show we're doing. So I got on Amazon and sent her a big plastic Tyrannosaurus Rex. I'd probably like it myself.
Yes.
I'm lucky.
You have a cute granddaughter. I've seen some of her pictures. You have a cute one.
Yeah. Have you seen that picture of my mom, my daughter, granddaughter, and me sitting on that couch together, four generations?
No, I didn't see that. I need to point that out to me because I don't remember seeing that one.
Yeah, I have.
But
it
I do
my,
have a link
Facebook
on. Yeah, I do have a link on the show information to your Amazon page. So I know you've written some good stuff, and we certainly recommend that people check it out. And, George, you've been doing a lot of speaking down there, probably talking to a lot of locals. I bet this is the number one topic, George.
Oh, gosh, yes. People want to know exactly what's going on, how we got to this situation. I'm doing a lot of speaking. In fact, I will be in Laredo a week from today for a huge rally. Well, I don't know how big it's going to be, but they're trying to have a huge rally on the border to bring attention to this whole situation. And it's lots of Republican types will be there for that.
Yeah, but I think on this issue, of the border, I don't think this is so much Republican versus Democrats, because as we were saying before, you've got Henry Cuellar out there, outspoken critic of the Biden administration. He's a Democrat. So I have a feeling you're going to see a lot more Democrats begin to realize the insanity of this, George. I mean, this is just insane what we're doing. And I got to believe a lot of Democrats are going to come around to that, George.
I agree. I just cannot think I just cannot think that this is going to end well politically for them.
No, I don't see how. I don't see how. And I keep asking the question that I started the broadcast with, what sense does it make to bring into the country people that you're not checking for COVID, coming from countries where the pandemic is pretty bad? What sense does it make to bring them into the country now when you're recovering from the pandemic? I mean, you could have a relapse of the pandemic because you're bringing these people in. What a terrible shame that would be, given all the work we've done to correct this. Guys, good night. Bruce, thank you very much for joining us tonight. I'm going to try to connect the two of you, so I'll wait for my email or my message connecting the two of you. And George, as always, keep up the great work down there.
Thank you very much. You have a good one, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you, Bruce.
I always enjoy it, Silvio. Thank you. Thank you,
George. All right. Good night. So good night, George. Good night, Bruce. And again, I'll just leave you with the same idea that I had before as I started the program. What sense does it make at a time like this, when you are coming out of a pandemic, to bring in people? I mean, it's just insane. That's all I can say. It's just totally, completely insane what is being done in the name of social justice. I'm not sure. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.